This meeting of the Senate Environment and Energy Committee will come to order. We have a quorum checked in. We're going to start with Senator Bach's bill on small snowmobiles. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm pleased to be here with a constituent request from the Iron Range, Senate File 520. And I believe you have in your packets a couple pictures of what these small snowmobiles look like. You'll see on the piece of paper with two snowmobiles on it, you can see the 12-inch square tiles on the floor there. Gives you kind of a look at what the length of them are. The one below it is a 5-year-old riding it, and then the standalone picture is of one of the smaller ones alongside a regularly sized snowmobile. These are very small vehicles. Most of them, I believe, are about 120 cubic centimeters. I think it would be fair to say they go about 8 miles an hour. They're really intended kind of to get young people kind of into the love of it. People buy them, they use them around the yard or maybe in the field. They're not intended to be ridden on trails. It really is kind of an introduction thing, after which time then eventually they go through the snowmobile training and they get into operating larger real snowmobiles that travel on trails. So, Mr. Chairman, it just seems a bit unreasonable that we charge the same registration fee for these small ones that don't travel on trails or frankly on our public right-of-way. It's more than just the annual cost of the registration. It's the cost of putting the stickers on them that are probably $30 to $40 to buy the registration stickers. I actually had the bill drafted to treat them like a collector vehicle, so they'd have a one-time registration fee. I'm not necessarily wed to that. Some people that have suggested to me that it might be easier just to exempt them from the registration process completely. I think there probably are a lot of them out there that aren't registered. That, you know, people pull them out of the garage, they drive them around the backyard for a while and put them back in. Pretty hard to ever get a ticket if you didn't have it registered, I think, that really never leave the property. So it seemed like a reasonable request to me on the part of this person, so I put it in front of the committee for their consideration. I think there probably is some kind of an impact to the snowmobile trail count, so I don't know if the fiscal note has been prepared yet. There's not a general fund impact, but something maybe more appropriate for Senator Thomasoni's committee to consider. So that, Mr. Chairman, is kind of the reason I'm here and the argument where I think it's a sensible conversation for the legislature to have.
Thank you. Mr. Franzen, you want to go ahead?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Doug Franzen, and I'm not a constituent from the Iron Range. Rather, I am an attorney representing the Minnesota United Snowmobiles Association. And our position is we think this is a pretty good idea. The reasons that Senator Bach outlined, particularly, it gets the kids away from the video games to really get outside and explore some Minnesota's beauty. Again, we don't know what this costs. We don't believe it's a huge impact, but that's another conversation. So sticking solely to policy today, we think it's pretty good policy. And would encourage your support.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Scalise.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering, so then these would not be on a snowmobile trail, so that if they were on a snowmobile trail, they would get nicked for being at the wrong place and not paying their fair share. Would that happen?
Mr. Chairman, why don't I let Mr. Franzen address that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, that is correct. It is not legal for them to be on a snowmobile trail. As well, it's not safe for them to be on a snowmobile trail. You know, arguably, if someone wants them on a trail, if you have a parent with a full-size machine in front of them, a full-size machine behind them, then they could do that. They would have to, each machine then would have to have a trail sticker. Having a snowmobile registration does not mean you automatically get to ride on the state trails and the state grant and aids. You either have a full-fledged registration or a non-trail registration. If you want to ride on a non-trail registration, you have to have a separate sticker. So if, and again, without both parents and the child in the middle, I wouldn't put my child on a trail. But with that buffer zone around them, they had a state trail sticker, that would be fine.
Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Franzen or Senator Bach, could you talk more about what the 175 cubic centimeters of the engine displacement is? Is that limiting the size of the engine, or is it limiting the amount? Like, what's the rough weight that a person weighing up to so many pounds, I assume, could ride on a machine of that size? Or could you give us any scope of what we're looking at, age range or size-wise?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, the cc's or cubic centimeter is the size of the engine, and the smaller engine, and they're reasonably detuned as well. They're not hot rodded up, so as Senator Bach said, they don't go fast. Without being derogatory, they're a very expensive toy. And roughly about 10 miles an hour going around the yard, that type of thing. And generally, by the time someone gets into their teenage years, they're done with this. I can't imagine somebody over 10 or 12 that would really be interested in this particular machine. They'd probably want to really take their safety training and start working towards youth snowmobiling and to get into a machine with, you know, a little more get up and go. I do not know the weight, Mr. Chairman. I don't know how heavy they are. But they are very low to the ground, and they're hard to tip over. Real hard.
Mr. Franzen, the one thing I'm wondering, I remember back, stated, but I remember when bikes had 175 cc's, and they were regular size things, and 350 or 450 was huge.
Yes.
I know that's ancient history, and we now have 3, 4, 5 times that much. But 175 cc's could go a lot faster than 10 miles per hour with something like that. I assume it's just because, as you said, they've set it to.
Right. Mr. Chairman, theoretically, someone could, if they had high mechanical skills, soup up the engine. But there's not a real equivalency between a motorcycle and a snowmobile. The suspension, how much is on the ground, the surface of the machine, the track that's on the ground, creates a lot more friction and drag. Whereas I'm proud to say I'm of that generation that I remember 175. Mr. Chairman, I remember 50 cc's Hondas. And they were pretty cool in their day.
Is there any further discussion? This bill goes to the Finance Committee, where the impact of the finances would be discussed. Is there any discussion? Is there anybody who had concerns about the bill who wished to testify? If not, Senator Osmond moves and Senator Huffman moves the bill be recommended passed referred to the Committee on Finance. Is there any discussion on that motion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Bach, this is not your grandson, Ben, on the fight. He's at least 5 years old now, right?
I have a grandson that's 5.
I know.
One that's 3.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What year that Polaris is?
Mr. Franzer, Senator Bach, that in the top picture on the one, the old
Polaris
snowmobile. What year is that? Looks like a museum piece.
That's all the
whatever it is.
Polaris.
That curve.
That's probably about a 1954.
Yeah.
It's one of the very first Polaris's made. Where it used to be in the back. It's Five Seasons Sports in Eveleth, Minnesota, if you'd like to see it.
Okay. Good committee tour.
Yes.
Would you pay for
Thank
that?
You.
Thank you.
Senator Saxog, we have Senate File 669 on aquatic invasive species. And there is a A1 delete all amendment. That is that author's amendment, Senator Saxog? You wanted this A1 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you.
Senator Hoffman moves the A1 amendment to put the bill in the shape the author would like it. Is there any discussion? Not all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. And as you say, we're presenting Senate File 669 as amended. And speaking of that amendment, actually, I think it's significant. You've got two bills and you had two senators from up north presenting them. That's what a thrill.
This is northern Minnesota.
Yeah. So anyway, Mr. Chair, I'd like to have Mr. Knopf explain the A1 amendment, if you would.
Mr. Knopf?
Mr. Chair and members, Section 1 deals with civil penalties, and what this does is put a $25 penalty on for launching water-related equipment into waters of the state, so that anything water-related equipment is a broadly defined term that includes boats and docks and lifts and other things. In violation of that section of law that we're going to get to later, this is a cross reference to that, and it's in the invasive species chapter. And you'll notice that it's effective January 1, 2017. It applies to violations that occur on or after that date. So it wouldn't start applying until 2017. Section 2 amends the training for offenders provision. Actually, there's two provisions, Section 2 and Section 4, that deal with it. One is in the invasive species law, and one is in the watercraft registration law. And so it's modified in both places to read identical, because it was read identical after the 2012 law that put in place this training and decal requirement. So this just states that we're going to delay this until January 1, 2016, in the training for offenders. You'll notice that kind of the whole program in this amendment of the training program, the decals, wherever, is delayed until 2017, but the actual offense or the $25 fine would be delayed even a year beyond that, to 2017. And then Section 3, again, this delays the establishment of the statewide course on aquatic invasive species to January 1, 2016, and also clarifies that there will not be a fee charged for the person taking the course. And then Section 4, I mentioned that earlier, that just corresponds in Chapter 86B with the change that was made in the invasive species law. Section 5, this is a trailer decal, the issuance by the commissioner once you've had the training, and this clarifies or specifies that it would be issued at no cost to the person. So if a person has five trailers, they would be issued one for each trailer, and it would not be at a cost to the individual acquiring the decal for their trailer. And then probably the most substantive changes for this, kind of that leads to all the other changes, is in Section 6, where it basically says that beginning January 1, 2016, a person may not launch watercraft or water-related equipment is defined into waters of the state. And that just, under the current law, it was transporting watercraft, and it was going to start applying. This section was effective on July 1st of 2016, or 2015, excuse me. So this is delaying it another 6 months till 2016. It also allows for a train validation issue, because right now it says you have to have the decal, but if you've had the train, have not had the decal issued, this would allow you to carry a piece of paper in your pocket that would say you've had the training, you've got a validation, you don't have the decal yet. And there was also in 2012 a temporary authorization of 7 days could be requested. This is for people coming in from out of state who haven't had the training. They can get a temporary authorization. This would extend that from 7 to 14 days. And then in at the top of page 3, you'll see a couple of exceptions to the law. Those that have a valid service provider permit under 84D.108. These are the service providers that put in docks for a fee, things like that. So these people have already had the training. So if they have that training, we're not requiring them to have this training also. And then also there's the number 2 is kind of the riparian land. If you're just kind of dragging your boat up to your property each year and putting it back in the same lake, you're not required to have the decal or the training. And so that's it. Those are the changes in Section 6. Section 7 specifies the penalty. This is the cross-reference to the penalty in the invasive species law, the $25. And then, but it also says that, except that any violations prior to January 1, 2017 are punishable only by a warning. And then that's the end of the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Knopf. On the penalty one, it says the penalty is for failing to display the aquatic invasive species decal, and it does allow you to have the temporary training validation. Is that covered because they wouldn't be failing to display it in violation of the section, or do you need to address the fact that you have the training validation that you can use instead of the decal?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, it's yes, because the penalty talks about in violation of 86B.13 subdivision 4, and that's the actual penalty provision, and sub 4 is the one where we're adding the training validation.
So it, you don't need to change it, the penalty, because it uses in violation of.
Yeah.
Okay. I just was checking.
No, Mr. Chair, it wouldn't be that's not a bad suggestion, is after decal or validation, or training validation, after decal.
Could you suggest where you put it?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, on page 3, line 12, after decal, insert or training validation.
Senator Hoffman moves that technical change.
Yes, sir.
Any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Saxog, you've got a number of witnesses.
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair. And I think the first thing I'd like to say, though, is that amendment kind of begs a question on sometimes as to, you've kind of taken the teeth out of this this bill. Why even have it? And my question to that is, or my answer to that is, that education is critical to this whole aquatic invasive species idea and stopping the spread of it. And, we're not trying to stop tourism in the state in any way, shape, or form. What we are trying to do is make sure everybody in the state understands how to clean their boat and have their boat so that they aren't spreading aquatic invasive species around the state. So this bill modifies the requirements now for the aquatic invasive species training and trailer decals. And with me today is Bob Meyer from the Department of Natural Resources, Jeff Forrester, Minnesota Lakes and Rivers Association, and Craig Dawson, Director of Research and Monitoring for the Minnehaha Creek Watershed District. They're going to give some brief presentations and answer some questions.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner of the DNR, and we do thank Senator Saxog for trying to help us improve this program. As you're aware, there are other bills to eliminate the program, and we still feel it is a necessary piece of our educational efforts. I do have educational materials I can hand out around to the committee on some of the ways we do educate people, but this training online is interactive. It's video, it's audio, it's watching people clean and decontaminate their boats, so we think it is a critical piece, and with this delete all amendment, it helps us move the issue forward without losing the program in its entirety. The other thing we do need to consider is the cost of the program, which we'll talk about as we move down the road into other committees as well. But we do support the bill. We are working with other stakeholders to try to address their concerns as well and make sure that we continue the fight against aquatic invasive species as aggressively as possible.
Thank you, Senator Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To Mr. Meyer, my dad is 85. My mom is over 70. They don't know what a computer actually looks like until I show them my smartphone. What are the options for people who are not going to be taking it? And I'm all for technology and working things online, and I'd probably do it that way. But what are we going to be doing for people who don't have technology?
Mr. Chairman, I should have included this in the packet. That was the information that's going around, and I'll hand this over. There will be a written opportunity. This educational material will be available to be mailed out to them, and they can do that on paper, non-wired option as well. But you do raise a concern that we need to continue to work on is how do we remove the barriers that are out there for people to make sure that we aren't setting them up for failure, so to speak. So we will work with that issue and make sure that people understand. But can you just hand this to Senator Weber? I'll hand around the educational, the written brochure, that the training program that people would be able to call our office and we would send out to them.
Okay, thank you. Senator Eaton?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is, I'm reading item 2.25, the temporary authorization that someone can get for 14 days from out of state. Does that mean they can put boats in and out of the lakes anywhere they want for 14 days without having any knowledge of any days?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Eaton, we were envisioning this to work as they would have to go online and apply for that temporary validation, or they could call and mail one out. We would give them written materials at that point in time, but it's to allow them. We don't want people to be caught inadvertently with this, but they would still have to come back and complete the program after that validation expires.
So, related to that, if somebody's coming in from another state, they have to know in it ahead of time to at least request the validation and get the material, and so they, in theory, learn it before they come.
Mr. Chairman, one of the things, and you bring up a good point there, is the existing law requires a person transporting water-related equipment into the state, which was a little broad. So if you're bringing your boat in from Wisconsin and going to Rainy Lake in Canada, you would need the decal. This would allow a person, once they go to a resort or get to their destination, we'll be working with all the resort communities and Explore Minnesota Tourism and others to make sure people are aware of it. But once they get there, just like many people buy their fishing licenses at these resort locations, they would be able to apply for this validation and get it at their site or at their location. So trying to remove another barrier that was out there.
Thank you. Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that's why I kind of question this little amendment we put on that says, or training validation. So how would employees of the DNR know that somebody has a training validation because they can't see a decal, so then they have to stop everybody? I mean, or am I missing something there?
Mr. Chair, Senator Scalzi, we may need to provide some clarification on that. Our intention would be that they would print out this temporary validation, and they could put it on their dashboard. They could show it to our officers. I mean, we want to make this as simple as possible, yet as effective as possible as well. So that's kind of the way we're looking at it. It would work. It would contain no private data, obviously. It would say, you know, a temporary permit. We need to make sure that people aren't duplicating them and selling them on eBay and things like that. But we need to refine that. But that's the intention. And one of the key components here is the delay to give us time to get everybody educated into what is needed and to move forward.
Yeah, and I just question, Mr. Chair, the amount of time that it's going to take the DNR if we put this little amendment on or not. But you think that it could be tweaked to work?
Mr. Chair, Senator Scalzi, yes, we do support the language in the amendment.
Mr. Forrester.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Forrester. I'm Executive Director of Minnesota Lakes and Rivers Advocates. So shoreline residents, cabin owners, lake associations, people all across the state. Thank you for giving me an opportunity to testify on this, and thank you, Senator Saxhawk, for working out the amendment and the language to make this workable. You know, there's a 17% violation rate in the state. One out of five boats now on the roads is not in compliance. And I spent some time looking at the Facebook page and some of the other social media sites talking about this trailer decal. And what I was struck by was it reaffirmed my commitment that we have to educate people, because there was so much misinformation in those threats that, you know, the people that were decrying the education were making mistakes. And Bob Meyer passed out brochures, and I'd like to sort of emphasize the difference in my mind between communication, which is what we've been doing for some years, and education, which is what this program is about. So people are interacting with the test and then being asked to acquire knowledge and then respond. And I think that once you add that testing piece, people regard literature with a different eye, and to get more at the education, more at the changing of behavior. So we support this amendment, and I can stand for any questions.
Questions for Mr. Forrester. Thank you. Mr. Dawson, Ms. Davis-White.
Chair Marty, members, thank you. My name is Sherry White. I'm president of the Board of Managers of the Minnehaha Creek Watershed District. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to the committee today as it considers SF 669, which would amend the state statute relating to the establishment of the Aquatic Invasive Species Prevention Program. The Minnehaha Creek Watershed District, MCWD, is a local unit of government with statutory powers, purposes and powers defined in Minnesota Statutes Chapter 103B and 103D. Our watershed in Hennepin and Carver counties has 129 lakes, including Lake Minnetonka. Thank you. MCWD views the spread of aquatic invasive species, or AIS, as a critical issue for our watershed and for Minnesota. We have adopted and are implementing an AIS management program within our jurisdiction in close collaboration with anglers, lakeshore property owners, marina operators, boat manufacturers, and other citizens, as well as other local units of government and the State Department of Natural Resources. We recognize the grave threat AIS poses to the health and recreational value of our lakes and streams and the serious potential impact AIS presents to property values and our economy. Our goal in AIS management is to prevent the introduction of new AIS in water bodies in our district while maintaining access to those waters. As we have learned from developing our own AIS program and working with many partners, there is no silver bullet in efforts to prevent AIS or remove them when they've been introduced. Some combination of education, prevention, intervention, and enforcement is needed. The AIS prevention program is a concept we have supported. It has a broad reach to increase public awareness of AIS through education and ease of enforcement. It is another tool we have been awaiting to put in the public toolbox to strengthen efforts to prevent the spread of AIS. This program was delayed in 2013, and it appears for 2015. We are confident that the law can be amended to accomplish its goals. That is why we submitted comments to the House Mining and Outdoor Recreation Committee last week to oppose the repeal of the program. The amendments proposed are on track in making the program more workable. Any new initiative is likely to have imperfections when it is rolled out, and experience will lead to changes that will make it run more smoothly. We will be supportive of amendments now and in the future, and will make the program more successful in its acceptance by the public and in its effectiveness in slowing and stopping the spread of AIS. One of the constant themes we heard during the development of our AIS management program, and one we continue to hear from residents in our district who are concerned about AIS, is that the penalties and sanctions for breaking AIS regulations are too small. They are not meaningful enough to gain significant and immediate compliance. The warning and the $25 civil fine appear to be just a slap on the wrist and hardly in proportion with actions that would disrupt the ecosystem of a water body or a watershed. We don't know exactly what the amount of the fine should be, but encourage you to consider something that will grab people's attention. Unfortunately, we had two more lakes in the Minnehaha Creek Watershed District where zebra mussels were found last year. In 2014, over 40% of the potential threats of AIS on watercraft inspected on Lake Minnetonka prior to launch occurred on trailers. The AIS prevention program is needed, and it is urgent that it be operational as soon as possible. With the training and certification in the AIS prevention program, people transporting boats will be more aware of what they need to do before they launch them. The trailer-borne threat of introduction should be significantly reduced. Amending the law to apply to all trailers used to launch watercraft instead of transporting them in Minnesota is reasonable at this time. things that delay initiatives like the AIS prevention program can increase the chance that more infestations will continue. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. We all value our waters in Minnesota and work toward the common goal of protecting these resources for our future generations. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. White. Mr. Dawson, did you wish to add anything?
No, I'm here to help answer any questions you may have.
Are there questions for Ms. White? If not, thank you. Senator Eaton.
I just wanted to thank Senator Saxop for bringing this bill forward. I was a bit dismayed when I heard plans to eliminate the program, and I think this is a very reasonable compromise. Thank you.
Sir, I'd like DNR to come back to the to the table.
If DNR could come back, and I also think Mr. Quillis wanted to speak to this as well. Is he in the room? Okay. So go ahead, Mr. Meyer. Go ahead.
Why don't we take Mr. Quillis, so then we can talk about it.
Mr. Quillis, is there anybody else in the audience, I'll ask now, who wished to speak to the bill with concerns or support? Okay, go ahead, Mr. Quillis.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tony Quillis, and I'm representing Hospitality Minnesota today. Hospitality Minnesota is the umbrella organization of the Minnesota Restaurant Association, the Minnesota Lodging Association, and the Minnesota Resort and Campground Association. Dan McElroy, who's the executive vice president of the Resort and Campground Association, sends his apologies, but he is literally chairing the Resort and Campground Association board meeting right now. We're on the agenda. They are reviewing this legislation that Senator Saxhog is authoring. But just to point out, Mr. Chairman, the Resort and Campground Association was started in 1931, and no, I did not represent them then also, but represents 340 resorts and campgrounds throughout the state. We have 6,000 cabins and more than 10,000 campsites throughout the state. A clean, safe, and sustainable waters are extremely important to the success of the resort and campground industry. We have a vested interest in clean water, and as avid users of the resource, a personal stake in avoiding the spread of AIS. We first off want to thank the DNR for suspending the program that, as it was written, you have heard today, there was some language in there that was confusing regarding the transport of trailers throughout the state, whether you came from Illinois going through to go to Canada, you came from Wisconsin going to Devil's Lake, North Dakota, which we don't encourage you to do, but if you were passing through the state, there was some confusion there as to how that language would be interpreted. But I wanted to point out to the committee that there were some unintended consequences also that have been occurring regarding this situation. We have heard from a number of our members, from guests and potential guests. Our members are fielding phone calls from folks saying, we've heard we've got to have a trailer decal. I can be arrested if it falls off. What's the training qualification? We had a resort up in northern Minnesota that had a multi-cabin, multi-week booking that could result in thousands of dollars of income for this resort, where they had to talk the potential client back into, because he was threatening to cancel, that no, it wasn't as bad, and the legislature's looking at addressing this. So that was just one example. The other one is, unfortunately, our friends in other states we have heard from at sports shows, whether it be in Kansas City or in Illinois, are starting to say, why would you go to Minnesota? Didn't you hear they have a decal now, law, that you have to have a decal on your trailer and have to pass an education program, and you could be fined if you don't have that. So we've now had a couple of members have to kind of tap that down at sports shows, if you will, that competitive states around us are starting to use it against us. So we think there are many other options for education and stakeholder involvement, and we're committed to be part of the solution in ways that are smart and common sense and allow us to remain competitive with surrounding states and while protecting the valuable resource of the state of Minnesota. I've had conversations with Senator Saxhog and other stakeholders that were willing to be part of conversations as this bill moves throughout the process. Mr. Chairman, thank you for the time and would stand for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Quillis. Questions for Mr. Quillis? Thank you. Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, I might just make a couple of comments referring to some of the testimony that Mr. Quillis gave. One, you know, I've encouraged the resort community, and I have a lot of resorters up in my territory, to be proactive. You know, there's no reason why, particularly somebody who had some kind of a reservation or whatever, shouldn't receive some type of a letter or call. And this new, of course, it'll help having the fact that it'll be much easier and to get the decal, and the decal will be free, and, you know, the new amendment will help many of these things. But I think that it needs to be emphasized also that violations, you know, you're in big trouble if you have a violation. If you're found with aquatic invasive species in your live well, driving down the road, you're subject to major prosecution. So, and of course, if you're just missing the decal, in 2 years you'll be subject to $25 civil fine, and hopefully by that time, because they're all free, and all you have to do is get online, everybody will have one on their trailer. So with that, those are the comments I made.
Thank you. Senator Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To Mr. Meyer, so this applies only to trailers. So when you have people with kayaks or people with canoes or those types of more portable devices, they are not subject to this law, correct?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Osmond, no, they aren't. If you had a trailer full of 8 canoes heading to the boundary waters, or some kind of trailer that was designed for moving watercraft or water-related equipment, is the term in the bill, actually, then yes, you would need the education. But those types of portable watercraft, they're most of the time tipped upside down, so the water is drained out of them, and the risk of the spread of invasive species, I would say, is less for those types of watercraft than a boat that has a bilge, that has a live well, a trailer that plants can hang on to. So those are the concerns we're trying to address. But to answer your question, no, they would not be required to have this.
Additionally, so what we're going to do is we're going to put people into a testing situation where I don't know how many questions are going to be asked. I guess that's sort of something to be determined down the road. But I guess knowing what we currently have available, that we have brochures, we have inside of the fishing laws, we have signs that every boat launch, at least I'm part of the Minnehaha Creek Watershed District, we've got signs everywhere that talk about AIS. It's a topic that everybody who touches the water, to my knowledge, understands and knows about. Do we know what level of additional compliance we can actually be able to measure as a result of this effort?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Osmek, that is a good question, and one that we will be trying to answer as the program rolls out and moves forward. One of the things we don't have a good handle on right now is the number of trailers that are there, because of changes that have been made to the trailer registration statutes previously, going to a permanent registration for your boat trailers and these utility trailers and things like that. Previously, we would have been able to get data from public safety that had the number of boats that were, or trailers that were in that category. That boat trailers aren't specifically checked off as a boat trailer or a snowmobile trailer. They're registered as a trailer based upon gross weight that they can carry. So, but we do need to measure the effectiveness of this program and make sure that it is working.
One additional question, thank you, Mr. Chair, is we're going to be handing out stickers in some cases. If you got 5 trailers, you take the course, you get 5 stickers. Obviously, there's going to be some, I know this is not a finance committee, but I think it's worth asking a question. What's the anticipated cost? You're going to have a website. You're going to have to maintain a database of who's taken the course, when they took the course, how many times they've taken the course, are they currently up to date. That's going to have to interact with the DNR and any of their systems to be able to make sure that we know that these people have the stickers. And then you're going to have to do paper copies for people who don't have computers. You're going to have people to input that information in the system. Do we have any idea on the actual fiscal cost of this effort?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Osmek, we're working on that right now. I mean, it costs in the range of $300,000 to $400,000 running the program. But you look at the risk of infesting one lake, it's a lot more than that. It's just a reduction in property values of a lake that would become infested with zebra mussels or invasive species. Can be a lot more dramatic than that, than the trickle-down effect that goes into property taxes and everything else. We feel it's worthwhile, but making sure that it is effective is something that we will make sure that we're keeping an eye on as it goes forward.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Meyer, in going with where Ms. White is on, you know, when she said slap on the wrist, sometimes a warning can be used as a teachable moment in a teaching tool. And then I know in 84D, there is a provision in it that says, you know, if you repeat a violation, it's like it doubles it. Mm-hmm. But just to clarify for me, so if I get a warning and it's noted that I get a warning and the next time I'm on the lake, would I then be subject to the civil penalties that are established in subdivisions 1 through 7 then? Or is that something that you haven't discussed? Because that would then give a little bit of more meat to the table. Does that make sense, or is it already dealt with?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hoffman, there's a one-year period to kind of that we will not be issuing citations. So after that first year, if you were caught without a decal or a validation, you would be subject to that fine. Our officers use discretion in those kind of opportunities where there might be a teachable moment rather than a blatant disregard for the program. So we can work with you on some language maybe to deal with that, but realistically we think we need to make sure we're holding people accountable to taking the training and trying to deal with that. We're in the process of going live to our online records management system for enforcement, and perhaps we could have a demonstration for you at some point in time on that technology, but it gives us the ability to have real-time documentation of violations versus paper. So we can tell if a person was launched in a Minnetonka one day, and then we see them heading in or trying to launch in Leech Lake and making sure that they have been decontaminated and are following the laws to reduce the spread.
Good. Thank you.
Senator Osmick.
Additional questioning. You just made reference to approximate annual cost of $300,000 to $400,000, and you're working on the numbers. That's going to be important, obviously, moving forward with this piece of legislation. But can you tell me for the current DNR how much they currently spend per year on in education and all of the work you do for AIS? What's the current general number that you're currently spending?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Osmick, I do not have that information available, but I will get it to the committee staff so they can send it out to you very shortly.
Is there further questions or discussion? If not,
Senator Marty, I guess I'd make one last comment then. This is, I think that we are thinking of this education program kind of in terms of AI, of zebra mussels. I mean, that's our current bugaboo. But let's remember that there's going to be other AIS that are going to come down the pike here. And so education and learning how to take care of our boats properly are pretty important. And in fact, as Senator Osmick referred to, we will probably be spending this amount for education in the coming years.
Well, Senator Saxog, just to let you know, Christmas Lake is one of the lakes that became infested in my area, and it really had nothing to, the infestation really had literally almost nothing to do with boats. It had to do actually with docks being moved between an infested water and a non-infested water, as well as water toys, as well as birds that can carry the infestation on them too, between lakes that are relatively close to each other. So while I think it's a laudable effort, I guess I have real reservations in the methodology that this is taking, because I don't think it really has a significant impact. When you bring up the case of going between Lake Minnetonka and Lake Vermilion, anything that's in there is going to die over the course of that travel. So really you're decontaminating by as a result of driving. I guess for the amount of money we're looking at, and I certainly want to see those numbers, I still have some heartburn on it, because there's so many ways you can get infestations into the water besides the trailer.
Well, and Senator Osmick, Mr. Chair, Senator Osmick, I think my response to that is that when you do have a number of smaller lakes and a huge population, there are going to be a lot of different ways that you're going to be able to be introducing AAIS and all sorts of different things. But, you know, we've got almost 12,000 lakes in the state, and most of them are in relatively low density of population areas. So, you know, I think the effectiveness is probably a little more as you get less people and bigger lakes.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, just to a couple of points Senator Osmick raised. Those are great possible vectors for the infestation of lakes, docks, ducks, whatever, boats. We can't confirm what the actual source of the zebra mussels were in Christmas Lake, but it probably is some sort of water-related equipment. And as for these veligers or the small microscopic zebra mussels dying in transportation, you'll see in some of the brochures we have it. You should dry your boat, some people say, for 21 days when you go from one water body to another, and decontaminate your watercraft with high pressure water at 140 or 180 degrees or something like that. So these are the things we want people to be aware of and help educate them, and providing that education and this program will get that out. And then the other piece is working with the counties to provide decontamination areas, increasing enforcement. There's a ton of things that are going on, and we're working with the counties with the increased funding that the legislature provided last year to develop a network of comprehensive education and enforcement opportunities out there to help protect our waters.
Senator Sachs, given the emails we received at the beginning of the session about repeal the whole thing or save the whole thing, you may be threading the line and finding a way. I didn't hear anybody coming in and yelling at your bill today. So, anyway, good luck. This bill goes to the Finance Committee, where obviously you have a lot of financial issues to discuss. Is there a motion? Senator Eaton moves that Senate File 669, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance. Is there any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? No.
Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
With that, this committee is adjourned.